It feels like the coronavirus has gone from a limited number of cases in one China province to a worldwide concern almost overnight. There are those who place this virus in the same petri dish as the flu virus, saying that it can be dealt with in quite a similar manner. Others believe the concern needs to be much stronger. Joining us now to explore all of this is a professor who teaches epidemiology at Temple University, previously worked with the Florida Department of Health during the Zika virus outbreak back in 2015-2016. Professor Chris Johnson, thank you for being here today, Professor.
Thank you for having me.
And learn more about Temple University. It is temple.edu. Just as a foundation for the listener, Professor Johnson, coronavirus and the flu virus, are there more similarities than disparities? Are there common ground between the two that can maybe calm some people down?
I think there's a lot more similarities than there are differences. I mean, whatever we get into the science of it, they are two different viruses, but they have a lot of the same symptoms. So we see cough, fever, some shortness of breath, things like that. So those are kind of indistinguishable between the two. That said, right now, with the numbers that we have with coronavirus, about 3% of people who develop the virus end up dying from it. With the flu, it's about 0.2% of people who develop the flu who get it, but so many more people have the flu every year. So then we still see thousands of people, tens of thousands of people, in fact, dying from the flu each year. But as far as symptomology, they present in similar ways. And if you want to prevent getting either one of those, you would do exactly the same things to prevent getting the flu and getting coronavirus.
As far as the coronavirus specifically, is this a new virus or is this something that's been in existence for however long period of time?
So our theory in public health is that this is actually a zoonotic illness, which means that it used to only infect animals, and now it's made the jump because someone consumed infected meat or they were cut whenever they were preparing meat or things like that from whatever animal reservoir the virus actually came from. So in that way, it is a new virus that we haven't seen before in humans because it made that jump. So now it's being called SARS-2 because it has a lot of those same respiratory symptoms that we saw with the SARS coronavirus back in 2002-2003. So it is a new virus to humans, but it's not a new virus to the world.
But once a virus like this has spread to the extent that it has and so quickly, is this something that is now going to be around for in a worldwide interest versus how it might have been a confined concern before all this happened?
I think now I would have to agree with the CDC's assessment that it is going to become a pandemic because it's already touched so many places in the world. But what's heartening, and I think is probably a little scary to people, is that a lot of the cases that we've been seeing are asymptomatic, people who don't have any symptoms whatsoever, but they're still able to infect other people. The reason I say that's heartening is if people are asymptomatic, then that means that actually there are a lot more people who have the disease that are not dying from it, which means it's not as severe as the previous SARS and Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS, which we saw a couple of years ago that hit South Korea and Saudi Arabia really hard. So it could be a little scary for people to think, okay, well, I might not know that I'm coming into contact with it, but it's really good from a public health sense to know that people can survive this. And to kind of give that some data behind it, only about 1% of cases of this coronavirus are in children, and that's people below the age of 18. Only 8% of detected cases are in people who are 20 to 29. So the people who are having enough symptoms to get tested are people who are middle-aged and older, and it's usually the people who are elderly and already are immunocompromised or have another chronic condition that make them more likely to be sick from any other disease anyway.
We're talking with Professor Chris Johnson from Temple University about the coronavirus. Temple.edu is the university's website, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. And even though what you said is the fact of the matter, this doesn't mean we need to be stocking up on personal face masks, at least at this point in time.
Oh, certainly not. Face masks are actually more important for people who are already infected to make sure that they're keeping their particles to themselves. They don't protect people who are well from people who are ill.
If you look at a map, at least in the current status of coronavirus in the states, California and surprisingly Nebraska are the states with the highest cases. One instance in California, which you referred to in a way that it was someone who didn't meet the criteria for the need for testing, but wound up being tested and being included now in the case count in California. Doesn't seem like there's no flow chart. You can look at a worldwide map, for example, as well, and you can see wide gaps of regions where there are no cases. Then all of a sudden, you go from Russia to Eastern Europe. There's nothing there, but then you go into Western Europe, and once again, you see cases arise. It doesn't seem to be a traceable path in the spread.
Well, you only know about cases if you've tested for cases.
Right.
So those areas may not yet have tested for cases. And even the CDC had issues getting their testing kits out in a timely manner. So it could just be that we haven't found them yet. And I think that's the case with the outbreak in Italy that did seem to pop up overnight. Because one person got tested and they started testing their contacts and they realized, oh no, there's 200 people who have coronavirus here. And I think it's just, I think that's just based off of the fact that they may not have started testing in a widespread way. Or like what we saw with that individual in California, they were following their flow chart, which says, okay, well, they haven't been in contact with a person who's a confirmed case, so we shouldn't test them. So they may not be testing based off of that either.
Does a virus, every year the flu virus is said to have variables or it mutates into another form or the vaccine has to change to adapt to whatever the flu virus of the year is perceived to be. With the coronavirus, are we seeing that happen as the, you know, from what it had been to what it is now? And is this going to be a challenge and a concern going forward now with this specific virus?
Given that this is a coronavirus and it's been called SARS-2, I would say that it's going to do more like what we saw with the first SARS. Like we would see this kind of initial push of cases, but it probably won't be sustained within the population, especially if we have a vaccine like we do for the flu. And because they're pushing so many resources behind getting a vaccine out there, I think once we get a vaccine that's disseminated widely and in an affordable way, I think that we would just see it recede and go away. It shouldn't be something that is persistent in our population once we have a vaccine for it.
At least here in the States, the expectation is somewhere between 9 months to a year. Just because of rules and regulations the FDA implements and indicts, although places like Great Britain, I think the approval system is much faster in some cases. So, as they say, to be determined. So in the meantime, if someone has a concern, I mean, no need for panic. We're not certainly condoning that, that's ideal. But just for personal concern, personal safety, what are some easy things people can do? Maybe they're already doing.
Oh, just make sure that you're washing your hands as frequently as possible. If you know you're going to be on the train or a plane, make sure that you're taking hand sanitizer with you. Alcohol-based hand sanitizer has been proven to kill this virus, so that's a great way to protect yourself. Overall, make sure that you're not touching other things and touching your face because you can infect yourself with a lot of different respiratory illnesses that way. And make sure that if you're sick, that you're coughing into your elbow or sneezing into your elbow to make sure that those respiratory droplets aren't getting in the air, because that's really how respiratory illnesses like coronavirus get spread.
And simple solution is when you're sick, stay home and let your body do its work, because our bodies are more have more recuperative powers than we probably give them credit to have.
Oh, absolutely. So definitely take care of yourself, because that's going to help you get through the common cold or the flu or anything without medical intervention. And another thing to note is that no one in the United States has died from coronavirus, because we have, even if you ended up having to go to the hospital, we have supportive therapies, and we can give you fluids and food and make sure that we minimize symptoms. So even if you did end up getting coronavirus, you, with our medical system and our medical advances, then we have treatments available to minimize people's bodily reactions to it.
And certainly the awareness and reaction capabilities here in the States is significant for even the most serious of cases, should or if they come about. But in the meantime, there is no need for a panic or a concern like some people are promoting or condoning. And we're not into that situation here in the States, because as Professor Johnson detailed, the awareness is there, the efforts are there, and the knowledge of what to do when a virus infects a human body is there as well. Learn more about Temple University. Their website is temple.edu. We've been talking with Professor Chris Johnson about the coronavirus and its reality. Professor, thank you for helping us understand that reality and for being here today.
Thank you.